We begin front and center this morning. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. Is Brexit going to happen or not? 2 years have gone by now. No deal for Britain to leave the European Union. We want to bring in Don Lloyd this morning, Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets, the Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives at Associated Bank for our Thought Leader conversation this morning. Don, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. How have you been?
I've really well. I've been looking forward to our conversation today. Dying to ask you about Brexit. What the heck is going on in the UK?
You know, it's been 2 years. 2 years ago that you and I sat here in this room and we started talking about Brexit.
Right. About and whether it was going to happen or not.
Exactly
whether they were going to vote on it.
Article 50. Right. Are they going to leave? Aren't they going to leave?
Right.
Was Article 50. And here it is. And it seems like yesterday. And 24 months later, here we are in the final minutes of a game. March 29th is coming up. And it is the last minute of a game. Are they going to score or aren't they? Are they going to get this thing through? And it's every bit as exciting, I think, as going down to the Hail Mary, the last pass at it. And is it going to get through or not? It's still up in the air.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen? I know that they're sort of in the MV3, the major vote number three is coming up, or they sort of want it to come up. MV1 has been turned down, was defeated substantially. MV2 was defeated. Now they're coming up with MV3. They are just wailing away at it.
Yeah, and it appears they're going to go into overtime. The Prime Minister has asked for an extension to June 30th.
Yep.
You've mentioned the two-year period. I don't know what more could be done in another month and a half.
Right.
That would fix it.
And the short extension to June 30th is by no mean a done's deal.
Yeah.
I mean, the EU has to agree. All 27 countries of the EU have to agree to that extension. So that's not even a done deal. And now they're sort of fighting within Parliament whether to sit there and rechange the wording of the request to have a longer extension there. So that's going back. They were going to ask for both, a short-term extension and then a longer-term extension. And the first thing that went out was, well, we'll just ask to June 30th. So this is just coming down to the final wire, and it's still sort of all up in the air.
If you had to guess, what would you say? Do you think there's a chance that this is not going to happen at all?
If it does, I will be absolutely, I think there's a low probability. I'd be shocked if it doesn't happen at all, simply because the government officials that want it are responding to the referendum. And then if they sit there and say, no, we're done, that's it, it does a couple things. Number one, what was the point of the referendum? Are you doing the will of the people?
Yeah.
You know, and you failed. And then the second thing is, there's absolutely no way if they pull out and say, okay, we're done, we're staying here, they can't change their mind 6 months, a year from now, 2 years from now and say, hey, we're going to enact Article 50 again and we're going to pull out. The EU would not be very supportive of that, and I doubt anything would get through. So to me, something's got to happen. You know, hard Brexit, hard exit, soft exit, something's going to have to happen. We'll see to June 30th. I doubt they're going to get anything done. I think you're looking at a hard exit. I really do.
Yeah. And if that's the case, I mean, it's already been having a negative effect on the UK. Businesses have been relocating.
Yep.
Employees have been told you're moving to Singapore, you're moving to Hong Kong, or you're moving somewhere else. And the European Union, the countries that are still in the European Union, stand to have a negative impact as well.
Absolutely. And it's this uncertainty that's out there. Surprisingly, it has not bled through to the stock market. It hasn't bled to the UK stock market, mm-hmm. to the exchange rates. Everybody is sort of in shock on the sideline that it's gotten this far without any agreement and any deal. And I think the money hasn't started moving yet because people are just sort of in a stupor right now. And 38 years of doing this, I would have bet my house that you would have seen volatility and depreciation of assets and big time over there. But you haven't seen hardly any of it. Everybody is sort of looking at each other saying, what is going to happen
right
here?
But that makes me wonder, when they really finally decide what's going to happen that day or that moment that it happens, is it all just going to crash then?
Yeah, well, and it very well could. It could be one of those it's not even a black swan event. It could be one of those major events where you walk in a day and you're so busy, you wake up or you're getting off the floor and it's 24 hours later.
Yeah.
And we haven't had one of those in quite a while where, you know, I can remember back, you know, with the beginning of the Persian Gulf War, you know, back in the 1990s, my lunch sat up there at the very top because it happened around 6 o'clock in the evening and I was running the night desk at the time and my dinner came at six, it sat up there and I didn't look at that dinner until 9 o'clock the next morning. And that's how busy we were, yeah, that everything started happening. And the next thing you know, time just passed, and I'm looking at my lunch, and I'm thinking, haven't touched that, and it's cold as can be. We're going to have one of those.
Right.
And this market, I don't know. There's a lot of new people and younger people in this market that haven't experienced anything like that. So, but again, you know me. I'm sort of a, you know, hope for the best, fear for the worst, and get ready for the worst.
And there's really no way you can hedge against any of this, right? You can't prepare for any of that, can you? Or can
no,
you?
It's sort of like sailing. You know, sailing is hours of boredom interrupted by sheer moments of terror. You just can't be asleep at the wheel. Mm-hmm. You have to be attentive and awake, so when events like this happen, and if they do come, you're prepared, and you're going to take it in stride. It's the people who aren't prepared and the traders that aren't prepared that are going to just absolutely leveled. So
I saw a report over the last week. Somebody was talking about you know, the Brexit thing, if it happens, for instance, a hard Brexit, referring to Great Britain and the UK as an emerging market. Yeah, if it, but true.
If you're not at the table, then what do you become? Now, you know, their economies, it's big, it's major, it's strong. My thing is that all of a sudden they're not at the table anymore. They're not at the seat. So what does that really make them? Sort of a hybrid, okay? We're sort of a major economy that doesn't have a voice, and we don't have access to, you know, the type of clout we used to have. I don't know what you call that. We'll have to come up with a new name for it, I guess.
There's another report I want to talk about. Global debt up 50% over the next decade. S&P is still saying this is not going to be it won't be bad for the next crisis. Corporate, government, household indebtedness rose to $178 trillion as of June 2018. That's a 50% increase from a decade ago. Yeah. I'm having a hard time understanding how that won't be as bad when we come to the realization that that's there.
Frightening numbers, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, we just, I don't know, change a B to a T, a billion to a trillion. When does it stop? And when do you start to, you know, really panic a little bit? Now, what it looks like is that a lot of this debt is sovereign debt, government debt to countries is really what it looks like. A lot of that tends to be China. So the question then becomes is that if you have a crisis or an event that occurs, what's the Chinese government going to do with the debt that's out there? You know, and more than likely, they're going to be, they've got the resources, they got the depth to sit there and weather the storm and step up to that. When you look back at 2007, 2008, and that whole debt crisis that we had back then, there was a lot of consumer or individual debt that was sitting out there, and the banks held a lot of that. That was really the straw that broke the camel's back back in 2000, 2008. When you take a look at that debt increase, yes, it has risen by 50% over the last 10 years, but that isn't centered on the individual. I think individual debt's only raised about 7% or so, somewhere in there. So it's a different, debt is debt, but it's a different group that is driving that and holding that from what we experienced back in 2007, 2008. So I don't know, you know, maybe it's wishful thinking or a glass half full. Maybe it's not, you know, the next cycle that comes around and the next credit crunch we get, we'll guess we'll find out. So,
And it makes me ask the question, have government officials, government leaders, have they forgotten the meaning of money? I heard a lawmaker in the United States refer to $2 billion today as chicken feed.
Yeah, think of that. Think what, you know, as an older parent, you know, what have we taught our kids? What have we taught this next generation? Yeah, chicken feed. Think about that.
$2 billion.
Yeah, now, I get it. You know, my parents used to think $100 was a lot of money, you know, and you know, to some it is. But, you know, it all changes over time. But holy cow, you know, I'm not sure what we've created here, what monster we've created. When does the B's and the T's become too much? You know, I say no more because, you know, I'm giving up there. But you're right. I mean, where do we go with this? You know, you do develop a callousness or a coarseness or an insensitivity to what these zeros mean. But on the other hand, for the past 30 years, 40 years, the zeros are added and it really hasn't done much, you know, to the expansion, to the economy, to anything we have going on here.
Yeah.
I don't know where that stops.
You
know?
I'm like you. My parents taught me the value of money. They always told me too. The debt, somebody's going to come calling on that debt eventually.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where the disconnect is. I always look at, you know, how do I run my personal finances at my house? You know, and, you know, I've got cash flow, I've got net worth, I've got bills that have to be paid, and I got money that comes in to pay those bills. And you sit back and you say, well, how can the government be any different than that? But they are. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got access to, you know, basically unlimited debt markets that they can sit there and tap and continue to take, and really no accountability whatsoever, because I'm an elected official or I've been appointed to this and I'm going to be gone when, you know, the music stops and everybody has to find a chair. More than likely, I'm not going to be around to miss that chair. Right. So
$1 trillion chair. By
where is the accountability? You know, I mean, I don't
know. And then there's the headline. This kind of jumped off the page, too. Australia could be the first domino to fall in the next global financial crisis. What the heck?
Think of Australia. Yeah. I mean, that has been sort of the bell of the ball, if you will. I mean, here's a country that has had 108 quarters, 26, 27 years of economic expansion. Think of that.
That's a long time.
108 quarters of positive growth going on. And if you take a look at their real estate market, 30 plus years of increased prices, you know, they have not, you've had a generation that has not experienced a recession down there. Think of that.
Yeah.
Staggering. So, you know, it looks great. Low unemployment. You know, people are working. The housing market is growing beyond belief. There's money that's being funneled into construction. What does it sound like? It sounds like 2007 real estate bubble that we experienced to a large part. So when you pull back that veneer of that bell of the ball and what they look like, and you start to really get down to it, it gets a little frightening. 25 million people. It's not a big economy. 1.7 trillion in GDP. The U.S., to put it in reference, is about 20 trillion in GDP. So smaller economy, but they still have the same problems and challenges that we have. And if you take a look at it, their real estate prices are just inflated. They're going up and up and up. There's a bubble that's there. They're sitting there making subprime lending, you know, subprime loans to individuals because, believe it or not, individual home ownership is declining in Australia. So who's buying the houses are investors. Investors going in, buying it, renting these things out, investing in things. To me, it's like, okay, 2007, 2008, 2.0. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all over again here. But we'll see. Smaller economies, maybe they can sit there and keep it under control.
And we've seen this story before. It happened in Ireland, didn't it?
Sure did.
2007?
That's right. And, you know, history tends to repeat itself. You know, do we learn from our past mistakes? Well, you know, hopefully the world's awake and the world's watching. The thing about Australia, though, is that they do seem to be aware of the situation and on top of it. You know, their whole retirement program that's down there, 9% of their salary goes to retirement. Okay, goes to retirement. Where's that money invested? Well, that's a lot of money that's invested in a small market domestically. And that money seems to be going to construction, to real estate, and the stock market, which is basically banks that are making those types of loans. To me, there's a bubble that's there, and it's starting to grow pretty big. But it has been growing pretty big for the last couple decades.
Right.
So we'll see what happens to it. I mean, I love Australia. The Aussies are great. Love them. And I hope the best for them. But, man, I hope you learned something about us and what we went through in 2007, 2008.
Don, how can people get a hold of you and have a conversation one-on-one if they want?
Hey, Associated Bank. If you go to the Associated Bank website, just look up Capital Markets, and there's numbers all over there on how we can be reached. Or you can sit there and send me an email, you know, donald.lloyd@associatedbank.com. I take any and all requests. So if I don't, I've got a team of 14 people that are happily give you a call back if I'm not around.
I always love our conversations. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Don Lloyd is the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets at Foreign Exchange Rate Swaps and Commodity Derivatives at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We do them every Thursday here in the Opening Bell. Remember, you can head over to WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. All of those places you can learn more about our thought leaders and hear more of those conversations.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell. The Argonne National Laboratory in the West Suburbs will soon be home to the world's fastest supercomputer. The announcement made recently. We want to bring in Michael Papka this morning, Deputy Associate Laboratory Director of Computer Environment and Life Science at Argonne National Laboratory, to talk about this morning with us. Michael, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning.
This is pretty exciting. The computer is going to be named, nicknamed Aurora. Give us the headline here.
Well, it is our intention that Aurora will be the nation's first exascale supercomputer, and hopefully the world's first exascale supercomputer. It will be capable of a billion calculations per second, about 100x, 100 times the speed of our current machine at Argonne. And so this is a great new capability for the lab, and a great new capability for the nation. The things that it will be able to enable are somewhat unthinkable even, and we're very excited about it.
Yeah, and give our listeners a sense of, and I know this is, we're going to be doing a little bit of numbering here, but compare this to the average computer CPU today about how powerful this is. It's hard, isn't it?
it is hard. This machine's going to be delivered in 2021, so it's a bit out there yet. But, you know, the ways the supercomputers work is they build off of the technology that we have at home on our desktops today, but they couple it together in a way such that they can work as one uniform computer tackling a large problem. So it will, the ones that we have today, a good estimate of, say our machine Mira is millions and millions of iPads or laptop computers working together. And then if you think of Aurora being 100 times bigger than that or more powerful than that, it gives you somewhat of a sense of the machines.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling for those of us who do not deal in computers every day. So, Michael, the big question, you talked about some of the things it's going to be working on here. What is the hope that this the reality of what this will be working on, what kinds of discoveries might we make with something like this?
Well, we'll continue to build off the success that we've had. Argonne as a basic or a multi-purpose lab supports science from the very basic to the very applied. So we expect to see similar type things on Aurora. At the same time, of course, it's in the news and on the TV and all that all the time about machine learning and deep learning. We're starting to greatly incorporate that into the workflow, that the mix of jobs or programs running on the machine. So things that we hope to do is, again, just build off of where we're at now. One example would be we currently are doing cancer research on the current set of machines, where the machine is looking at different chemical compositions as treatment and how they pair together and how they affect tumor cells. And we can do that kind of on a small scale now. But going towards Aurora, we can hope to do this on a tremendously larger number of chemicals, tumor types, and really kind of drive towards this idea of personalized medicine, where your treatment is tailored to your body's makeup and the disease that you're trying to fight. And so that's on a very applied side. An example looking towards the more basic would be how the universe has evolved and why we're here and what's all around us. So there's a group of cosmologists at Argonne who are simulating the universe from the very beginning and evolving that out in time. And Aurora will allow us to do that with more fidelity and more detail than we have ever been able to do in the past. So those are a couple examples at each end of the spectrum, from the very applied to the very basic.
Yeah, and there are some other exciting things, too, just, again, on the basic level, perhaps even modeling weather forecasting, talking a little bit about climate change. That's a kind of a cool thing, because you can go through tons of different scenarios with that.
Absolutely. I mean, that is actually really the power of computers, right? Their ability to run these multiple scenarios in parallel and allow you to see all these what-ifs. If I changed this, if this was this way, what would happen? And you're absolutely right when it comes to the climate and weather. This is exactly the predictions that you see on TV now of the various hurricane paths. We'll be able to do those with more detail, more of those paths. And with each generation of the supercomputer, we can add more science into it, if that's kind of a simplifying it, but make it more realistic. Every time you add a new equation, it takes compute time, and that either means that you can't do a problem as big as you like or with enough detail. So you make some trade-offs. As we move towards Aurora, we can continue to add that more and more detail, and we can make the simulations one step closer to reality, and then we can run hundreds of thousands of them. And so you're absolutely right. The simulations that we'll be doing in climate space will be greatly enhanced by Aurora.
Yeah, when the announcement was made of the computer coming to Argonne, I saw that they think it was the Energy Secretary talking about possibility, too, of mapping out the human brain. I recently was reading about how we just didn't have enough computer power to do all of the mapping of the human brain, to download all the stuff from a human brain into the computer. This kind of gets us a little closer to that, and that's kind of exciting, isn't it?
It is. We do have efforts underway of that sort at Argonne right now. I mean, Argonne is a national lab. It is a home to user facilities that support science around the world. Of course, the ALCF that I direct is one example of that. The Advanced Photon Source, which is, for all practical purposes, a big X-ray machine, is also at Argonne, so they're very nice to be next to each other. So we're working with professors from the University of Chicago who are imaging brains in the Advanced Photon Source. And right now, we can image a brain, and we're doing mouse brains, and bring that over to our current computers and reconstruct it. But having one brain just tells you about that individual. Now, if you want to understand the brain in general, we need to look at a lot of them. And that's really where the complexity comes in. And like I said, you know, we're only doing a mouse brain now. The human brain is much more complex. And so you want to be able to reconstruct these, understand how they're wired up in a large sense. And Aurora absolutely will help with that.
Why was the name Aurora chosen?
As Secretary Perry suggested, it was named after his dog, Aurora Pancake. But we do like dogs, and it's a good fit. But we really looked at, you know, kind of the idea of the light and looking toward the future. So it kind of comes after the Aurora Borealis.
So will we notice anything different at Argonne? Will there be a glow on the horizon where Argonne is? Or how will this be? I mean, how much room does it take for the world's biggest supercomputer? What kinds of things are you going to be getting ready for now over the next months to get ready for its arrival?
Well, over the next couple of years, we'll be we're expanding our machine room space, which is great. I was out there actually during the announcement. And just, I think people would be fascinated. This is the amount of plumbing and electrical work that goes into running one of these things. So it's water cooled. So there's a lot of plumbing happening right now within the construction site. There's a lot of software and code development that the team needs to do to make sure that we can effectively use this machine. We're already working with 15 application groups so that on day one, when Aurora arrives, we will start producing science. So we have 5 applications in the traditional high-performance computing space, things like the cosmology example I gave. Then we have 5 in kind of the learning space, which is the cancer example I gave. And then we have 5 more in what we would call the data space, where we're looking at large data sources, things that are coming off of like the Large Hadron Collider or the Advanced Photon Source. So we're getting those applications ready so that on day one, when Aurora turns on, we're producing science right away. And those, over the next 2 years, that will be our focus.
Well, Michael, this is very exciting. We appreciate you coming on and sharing a little bit with us this morning. We're all going to be watching with a lot of anticipation to see what Aurora does.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, Michael Papka with us this morning, Deputy Associate Laboratory Director of Computer Environment and Life Science out at Argonne National Laboratory in Lamont. The contract for the computer by the way, to be developed by a Seattle-based supercomputer maker Cray Incorporated, along with Intel Corporation, and, of course, at the Argonne National Laboratory. You can find more about this online, too, at ANL.gov.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures down 31 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed this morning. Now, the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. For the second time in a week, lean hog futures have ended up the $3 daily limit at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, hitting new contract highs yesterday, increasing worries about the spread of the deadly African swine fever in China. Traders expect that China, the world's biggest hog producer and pork consumer, will need to import more U.S. pork as African swine fever seems to be even worse than the Chinese government is reporting. So at the end of the day yesterday, up the $3 limit, live cattle futures up 82 cents a hundredweight, and feeder cattle futures up 82 cents a hundredweight as well. Meanwhile, the president said yesterday the proposed trade dispute settlement with China is moving along nicely. That was his quote. He said the deal coming along, and he said that to reporters at the White House yesterday. Meanwhile, our delegation of trade negotiators on their way to China to conduct face-to-face talks. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Before we leave you, just another story that's breaking this morning from Reuters. The captain of the doomed Ethiopian Airlines flight was unable, apparently, to practice on a new simulator for the Boeing 737 MAX 8 before he died in the crash with 157 others. Reuters quoting a pilot colleague this morning. Apparently, the pilot was due for refresher training at the end of March, his colleague telling Reuters, 2 months after the Ethiopian airliner Airlines had received that simulator. Report says that the first officer who was on board that plane did practice on the new MAX simulator, but it's unclear whether or not that was the old 737 MAX simulator or the new one. Nearly 159 people died in the crash in Ethiopia, the second in 5 months involving the 737 MAX 8, the first in Indonesia, and it led to the grounding of all of those Boeing aircraft. The WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Thursday, March the 21st. Weekly jobless numbers due out today. Analysts forecasting 225,000 workers filing first-time unemployment benefits last week, up from 229,000 the previous week. Bank of England will announce its latest policy decision. The central bank expected to leave rates on hold. We'll also get the Philadelphia Fed Business Outlook Survey, the leading indicators. Also, the EIA Natural Gas Report, earnings from Darden Restaurants, Tencent, Nike, Levi Strauss IPO expected, and EU leaders are expected to meet to discuss whether to give the UK an extension on Brexit. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, March the 21st.